This is a test, 1, 2, 3, 4. This is a test, 1, 2, 3.
Bob Hartzman, we're both very helped. And
this is Dr. Bob Day?
Bob Day, yeah.
So he worked with you. So you've been close to him a long time.
Yeah, and I'm a director of Fred Hutchinson, which is his organization.
I asked him why he didn't speak up earlier, because it was so clear. He said, protocol is protocol. And I said, but truth is truth. He said, well.
I call him Lord Root of the Matter.
Lord Root. That's good. Let's just talk about the project for a minute.
SS-18's pointed our way. You know.
How many?
308.
Oh. Is that one?
Each with 10 warheads.
So accident.
Yeah.
Now, that's why I would say, let's proceed. What are the dangers? Why should we be worried about this?
You want me to say some of the same things I said?
Start right from the beginning. I've not heard anything.
The problem we have is that there are potential threats of all kinds. The Soviet Union, former Soviet Union, and the United States, and China, and France, and the United Kingdom have among them thousands of warheads. An accidental launch could lead to a terrible human tragedy. That is probably the least likely source of the next Chernobyl. Much likelier sources are the weaponry that has been disposed of. The two nuclear submarines that sank from the United States Navy, which we think are quite safe because of their fail-safe mechanisms. The much more dangerous reactors in the at least four Soviet submarines that have sunk due to casualties. As an example, the one Komsun Nolux, which sank 310 miles off of the coast of Norway in 4,500 feet of water.
What year?
In 1986 or 7, has two nuclear-tipped torpedoes with plutonium, which has a half-life of 20,000 years. You need to check that time, but that's roughly it. And leakage will inevitably at some point occur. The Soviets tell us that they disposed of numbers of nuclear reactors in the shallow waters off the islands Novaya Zemlya, north of Siberia. They have sunk at least 17,000 barrels of radioactive waste in those same waters, some of which were sunk by firing holes in them as they tended to float. In this country, we have...
You're kidding.
In this country, we have leakage from nuclear radioactive wastes in the Hanford site and elsewhere. Although the Navy's record, operating its currently roughly 100 nuclear reactors, is absolutely flawless, thanks to the tyranny of Admiral Rickover. Commercial reactors have not been nearly as safely designed. Three Mile Island is an example. And our commercial nuclear reactors are much safer than those of the former Soviet Union. There are, I think I said reactor number 3, but I believe it was reactor number 4 at Chernobyl that was the one that exploded. Reactor number 3, or vice versa, is reportedly in very bad shape. There are 19 of the Chernobyl-type reactors in the Baltic states, Ukraine, Russia, any one of which could go. The concrete encasement over the reactor that did have the fire has been inspected recently by one of our scientists, and it is in a very bad state of repair. He reports that birds are able to fly in and out through garage-sized doors. There are openings in the encasement. The nuclear residue has crumbled into dust and is capable of being carried out by the rats that breed there by the hundreds. The religious icons from the homes in the area that was polluted have in many cases been picked up and sold into the commercial market carrying cesium and possibly platinum, plutonium, into homes in Russia and elsewhere. The possibilities of an additional Chernobyl are rampant, not to mention what will happen when Saddam Hussein or Rafsanjani or Kim Il-sung or Gaddafi get their hands on their first nuclear bomb.
So we have design. We know that there's a variety of design sureties.
Yeah, the threats are an accidental launching of a missile, design sloppy designs, as in the case of the Chernobyl reactors, which lead to failures, personnel error, acts of terror. Had the people that did the World Trade Center instead followed the truck driver in through the fence at Three Mile Island, look what could have happened.
Let's list the incidences that I should investigate that have proven how it can go off. We have Chernobyl. We have the submarine. There was a submarine accident I keep hearing about in Russia. What was that about?
Well, there were four different submarine...
I don't mean the sinkings, but weren't there a bunch of men that were exposed in the submarine?
Yeah, in several of those that did subsequently sink, the men were exposed to very serious radiation and were finally pulled off of the ship. Some of the ships have gotten back into port after a radioactive incident. Others have sunk, but in both cases, men have been exposed.
Do any of those have names or dates that you recall?
No, that can be gotten.
Sure. What about other, what is Shkololeks? They keep talking about another, before Chernobyl,
In Chelyabinsk, there is a city in the Urals, Chelyabinsk, to which I was not permitted to go when I did my five-city tour of Russia, and they wouldn't tell me why. In 1990, we now know that it was exposed to a series of nuclear accidents, two or three or four, over a period of 30 or 40 years, and one of the complications from a scientific standpoint is that it's therefore very difficult to reconstruct who was exposed when and which date brought person A into the radiation that he now shows, that sort of thing. But we do know anecdotally that children from Chelyabinsk have, show signs of eye problems, neurological problems, and Admiral, as Dr. Vorobyov has said, we hardly know where to start with regard to Chelyabinsk.
Is there the possibility that it was a series of Chernobyl? We just don't know.
Well, I think the fact of the matter is that there were a total of 1.2 billion curies out of Chernobyl, which is roughly... I guess 200 or 300 times the amount that the Japanese got out of Hiroshima or Nagasaki.
Other major moments we can look back to see what's already happened. In the Soviet Union, were there others besides Chelyabinsk, Chernobyl, and the submarines?
Yes. I don't have additional details here, but that can be gotten. But I've been told that there are seven or eight places. If you carry a detector with you, seven or eight places around Moscow where you'll get high readings, places that apparently waste material has been buried.
So there are waste zones all over that country,
probably. Yeah.
And waste zones all over ours.
Yes, although ours have are better known and have been more truly made secure than in Russia, where under tyranny you don't have to have any respect for human life. It is the case, I believe, that it has been the policy of one administration after another in this country, executed by the Secretaries of Energy, not to disclose the extent of our exposure. The first Secretary of Energy to be open-minded about it was Secretary Jim Watkins in the Bush administration, who did permit the kind of research to go on.
Is that Admiral Watkins?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's very
encouraging. Yeah.
I leave the correspondence.
Thank you. We'll just walk over there right now.
Let's see, 2818. Look at that. I called our daughter, who picked one up. It turned out that it was before the Chernobyl episode, and I interrogated Musa to make sure that she hadn't accumulated any on her Russian trip.
Well, what damage could an icon do?
Well, if it's got cesium-137 or plutonium in it from the disaster, it could radiate the hell out of you.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
So it's not even low dosage that's within its safe regions?
I think it would be far more than the
limit.
Yeah, the limit.
Whatever they are,
yeah.
They're not, right?
Right.
What can I get you, sir?
I was looking for the dressing, but I guess it must be already on here, huh?
I don't know. You don't think that ice cream looking stuff is the dressing. Would you like a
Could
hot?
That be? No, because that's got a cookie with it. Thank you.
Other in the U.S. or in the world, examples like Chernobyl or the submarines that you can think of besides Three Mile Island.
Inside Russia and China, we don't know everything. In this country, I think it's leakage of nuclear waste, primarily, plus Three Mile Island. I don't know of any problems that the British or French have had. The atmospheric testing that has been done in this country, as you heard this morning, is bad. The Russians did it until we signed the Mutual Test Ban Treaty. The French have done a lot down in the South Pacific.
What's happened recently at Hanford? It's been in the news a lot. It's closed down now, isn't it?
There's the barrels in which they stored the waste have over the years begun to deteriorate, and there's leakage into the water table. And in addition, Jim Watkins has authorized these studies to be done of whether or not there's been radiation exposure of harmful extent on the workers. So we now have opened up that potential problem.
Do the Russians and the Ukrainians and the Belarusians get offended when we talk about them as holding back secretly, when they think we have held back as secretly?
Well, nobody's said that to me, but that's why I try to, as I did both yesterday and today, talk about both governments, because we're bad too.
Do any examples come to mind that where we illustrate where we're bad too?
Oh, sure. In this Agent Orange thing. The hearings that we got Congressman Weiss to hold demonstrated that the government flatly decided at OMB level to direct to the Centers for Disease Control, Dr. Vernon Houck, and the Air Force with its ranch hand studies to manipulate the data so that there would not be a conclusion that it was as likely as not that health effects occurred from Agent Orange.
So our own young men who were damaged would have no recourse to hospitalization or special.
That's right.
So it was primarily a monetary decision as well as a.
And the OMB memo says not only would the cost to support the veterans be bad, but in addition, there would be tort liabilities from the exposure of commercial corporations to suits. Because we continue to sell dioxin in pesticides.
Any other examples you can think of of release of radiation in the world that we haven't talked about that I can flesh out?
We pretty well inventoried the ones that are potential. The actual releases, I can't name additional ones, but I'm sure that the literature would show us.
We'll find them. Yeah. The problem of low dose and high dose is getting to be kind of strange in my head after just one day's exposure to the low dose, high dose controversy. It seems that even the use of the word low dose can be misleading in the sense that we're already overdosed, all of us, in any kind of dose.
And the same
talk
thing
about that a bit.
Same thing is true, incidentally, in dioxin. But as Dr. Day and Vorobyov pointed out, there has always been some radiation, the ionized layers and so forth. And as Day just commented, that's part of the reason why we've advanced to the point we are, because the mutations and survival of the fittest have modified animal life to bring us to our present state. But beyond that level, man with his genius has now brought additional radiation beyond what cosmic rays bring into the universe. And some of that is clearly harmful. I think people tend to respect Vorobyov's definition as kind of the daddy of low-level radiation. He says below 100 rads is what he would define it as.
Talk to me just for a minute about rads and the other curries. I'll go look it up, but just give me a layman's definition.
I'm not that good at it.
How about for me to talk to Dr. Day about that?
Sure.
Would he be the one?
Mm-hmm. He'll give you the most concise scientific answers.
He sounded very clear and clean.
Another very good person is Captain Bob Hartzman, who's located in Washington, and he's here at this conference.
Bob Hartzman.
He's the other fellow who worked with me on the dioxin study, and he's the Navy sponsor for the National Maradona Program. The money comes through him.
And he would be open to talking to me about
it? Yeah.
Okay. That's good. That would be a help. I get the feeling from Vorobyov that he's kind of angry in the sense that nobody's taking it seriously.
He's been very frustrated. And that's what made me promise him we'd get something done when I first met him. First he was, although he was called into the presidium and advised them as to what to do, when the data was collected, he was ordered not to disseminate it and was prohibited from organizing the studies that are now getting organized, even though by that time Gorbachev was the president. The system hadn't opened up yet. Glasnost and Perestroika hadn't proceeded to the point where they would let him go forward with something that could be harmful publicity. So, and he's aware of the fact that after 7 years, the data isn't going to be nearly as good as it would have been earlier.
Why is that? Because those were not treated who could have been helped by the data, and besides, the data is so old now it's not as
treatable. Right, and populations have emigrated.
So they can't follow up on the data.
Mm-hmm. It'll be infinitely more difficult for them to go back and collect data than it was for Dr. Till in his effort, as he described, going back and checking on those people who had been studied earlier.
I didn't hear the Dr. Till thing, I don't think.
Ah.
That was this morning?
Yeah.
Around the
10:30? He was the second one.
Oh, I missed the second one. Can you summarize that for my... I'll get the manuscript, but...
He reviewed three studies, two of them in of the exposure of people to the atomic tests in Utah, which is another one of the big sources, of course. That went on for a number of years. And one of them associated with the Hanford site.
These are all published studies?
One is published, one of the Utah studies is published, the other one has gone in for publication. Okay. And the Hanford study is still ongoing, although they have numbers of point papers and news releases associated with it. Dr. Till has insisted on constant disclosure, constant public meetings, nothing in secret, nothing private. Hillary Clinton should take a lesson from him. Incidentally, I don't know whether this is a useful point to make, but he happens to be a former Navy person, too.
Till.
Jim Watkins is, Till is. And there's something about us Navy guys that makes us more willing to go public, I think.
Interesting. What do you think that is?
I like to think it's that we tend to be more nearly Eagle Scouts.
Thanks for the help. Would you walk back with me for a moment your trip to Russia that was so important to you? And one place especially, the meeting with the first contact with Vorobyev.
We made, I've made three trips to Russia. The first one was a trip where the International Security Council, a Washington, D.C. based group, of which I am a member, made arrangements to have a group of senior U.S. military meet with a group of senior Soviet military to exchange views. That was in 89, as I recall. Just before we left to go there, one of Moose's high school friends living in Australia visited us, and she had the telephone number of Moose's best friend in high school, living in Khabarovsk, over near Vladivostok in Siberia, whom Moose had not had contact with for over 40 years. Fortunately, the very first phone call got through.
Wow.
And Mila agreed to come to Moscow all the way across the continent to meet with Moose. And when she arrived, she brought with her one of Moose's other girlfriends and two of Moose's high school beaux.
Oh, my gosh.
One of whom was a doctor practicing in Omsk, another of whom was head of a soccer association in Chelyabinsk, the fumigated city. They had a marvelous three or four days, the five of them. They were the only survivors of probably somewhere between 50 and 100 classmates who had been forced to go back to Siberia when Stalin came into Manchuria at the end of the war. And the reason they were the survivors is that one was a doctor, one was an athlete, one was a music teacher, and one was an English teacher. The skills that were needed. The people with lesser skills went to the virgin farms where they died at hard labor or into the gulags. And we then promised those four people that we would come back in another year and visit them and their families in their native towns. As I said, we weren't able to get permission to go into Chelyabinsk, but we did get permission to go into Rostov on the Don, where the other girlfriend lived, and to Omsk, where the doctor and his family lived, and to Khabarovsk, where Mila, the best friend, and her husband lived. And we tied that in with a visit as Dr. Vorobyov's official guest, so that I could try to recruit a relationship between the Navy, the National Marrow Donor Program, and his bone marrow registry, which has now been done. So we were in both Leningrad and Moscow, as well as other cities, and he looked out for us and opened the gates for us to get in and out of these other cities easily. And during the course of that meeting, the issues with regard to collaboration on Merrill being relatively easily solved, he then concentrated on getting me interested in this low-dose radiation problem. I was in 1990, and I promised him that I would work with him and get something done, and it's taken until November of 92 to get the Bryansk Symposium and now this one going, and we still don't have the end in sight because we haven't yet raised enough money to do the whole job.
Go back for just a moment to the day you met him. What do you remember of that first meeting? Was there a lot of correspondence ahead of time?
There had been correspondence between one of his people, Dr. Jania Margolis, who was at Fred Hutchinson as an exchange doctor, and Vorobyov, to let him know that we were coming, and he was gracious enough to meet us at the airport when we arrived.
This is what year and what trip?
This was that second trip in 1990 back to meet...
when you came back to meet the schoolmates.
Right. And interestingly enough, since I was doing that trip on free mileage tickets, Musa and our daughter had the airline tickets that I had to split airlines to get enough free mileage tickets that went into Leningrad by way of Moscow. Vorobyov met them. My son-in-law and granddaughter and I went directly to Leningrad with our free tickets. So Musa met Vorobyov before I did, and then he met us again when I came in from Leningrad to Moscow. Entertained us both in his home in Moscow and in his very austere dacha 20 miles outside of town. And we got acquainted with him and his doctor wife. He is a very humble and gracious man. Of course, I communicated with him through Musa, or through Nikita. But we've gotten to be as good friends as you can be, speaking different languages.
The young man that travels with him, is he kind of always the interpreter?
Yes, and he also is a doctor.
He seems to know so much about the issues being discussed. It's really helpful to have that, to these women who don't know.
That's right.
Better to be halting in English and accurate about the issues.
Right. It's been fortunate that some of the doctors speak English well enough to do both.
And to set warnings, that's not the correct number.
Right.
In an ideal world, looking back on this moment in 10 or 15 or 20 years, what do you hope to have accomplished through all of this? The many facets of it.
To me, the doctors will accomplish, if I'm successful in raising the money, the first objective, which is to answer the question. And it'll never be an exact answer because you never, the data is not that certain as to whether there is a threshold below which the body doesn't have a problem or whether there is a threshold. My own prejudice is that it's going to be pretty clear that there is no threshold because of these, both the Israelis and the Russians have data showing that at least childhood thyroid cancer is greater. Nevertheless, to answer that question, and if
the threshold question,
the threshold question, and And to answer the question as to just how serious the risks are if there is no threshold, or if there is some level below 100 rads, you know, if for example, we agree that low level is below 100 rads, and if it's discovered that a threshold is at 10 rads, then we're going to have to know what are the health effects from 10 to 100 for low-level radiation. That's important because it'll show us then, the doctors will learn a lot about how to treat. What guys like me will learn is how important is it to evacuate people quickly from the areas where it's not high level, but it's low level, below 100 rads. And if there is a threshold, you go out to where the 10 rad line is, and you don't evacuate. If there is no level, no threshold, you go all the way out to where it's zero to evacuate. I further hope that we can then use the scientific data to use rational publicity to tighten up safety standards for nuclear reactors and for waste disposal. I hope we can use the data to accelerate our efforts to get legitimate nuclear waste disposal sites. You know, that battle has been going on for 30 years. While the stuff accumulates at each reactor, one state after another refuses to become the national repository for deep salt mine based storage, and yet we're going to have to get to that. Or alternatively, and this is something else I've been working on, we're going to have to find ways to transmute the material from highly radioactive to inert materials. There's some technological breakthroughs going on right now that might make that be the end game.
And there's not something left out of that process that too has to be disposed of?
There is a theory now produced by a model that explains how you can transmute radioactive material into inert elements. And there is a practical system being used that burns radioactive material to less radioactive, and you can do it again and make it still less radioactive. Both are still in the test phase.
So you have hope for that.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about the final results of this, what you're trying to go. Was there anything else you wanted to add to that list? You want to find out for doctors, because then we'll be able to alleviate fears mm-hmm. and treat symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And know symptoms in advance to do preventative treatments.
Right.
You want to know for mayors and police chiefs and fire departments and presidents.
How to evacuate, how far to evacuate.
You want to increase safety standards so that these things won't happen again. You want to find out ways of dealing realistically and positively with the wastes and not expose people in that way. What did I miss?
One other thing I haven't mentioned is that there is also new technology coming along that will make it possible to treat better the effects of exposure to radiation, which would lead, in my hope, to the stocking of extra supplies of this in the vicinity of likely explosive areas. In other words, you'd want a lot of it around Three Mile Island, 20 to 30 miles away, ready to be used on
These
the population.
These first aid kits hanging on the
right,
wall.
Right, right.
But what would that first aid kit look like now to you? What would be in it?
I think it'll be just pills or powder that helps the immune system deal better with the effects of radiation.
Immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Because apparently it's the blood that's... And the of course the skin, but those pills.
And the organs are affected, but it's all.
What kind of pill would that be?
It's a
pills like that.
Not yet, but the it's being developed.
Really?
So you'd carry a pill if you're in danger of being exposed, and if something went off, you'd take the pill.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like they call it for poison, an anecdote, but antidote, but.
There was I got a call from Dr. Don Thomas, the Nobel Prize director of our National Marrow Donor Program, who works at Fred Hutchinson, a year ago, asking me if I would become a director of a company called Cell Therapeutics Incorporated, which is a company formed by some doctors who spun off from Fred Hutchinson when they learned, sort of by accident, the way these things happen, that a couple of combinations of chemicals gave much better results in the restoration of the immune system from cancer patients that had been given bone marrow transplants. And as they have done their basic research, they've distilled the basic composite chemical that was formed by these two, and they're now in the process of testing that. They're in the unique position, normally a new chemical, before FDA will permit you to test it on humans, has to be tested on animals. Since they learned this thing from having given two different kinds of chemicals to humans, they've been able to shortcut that, and they're now already in the phase where they can test it again in its basic form with humans. And they believe that they'll be able to restore much more rapidly the immune system from the shock of the chemotherapy and the radiation that you give to kill the cancer cells before you transplant. If it works for that, it'll work for people exposed to Chernobyl.
If it happens fast enough.
Yeah.
And that's your idea for the kids.
Right.
What would you say to government leaders who are worried about the long-range budgetary effects of this kind of study? Nobody's evil out there, but we're all so scared about spending more money. How are you raising money? What's your pitch?
Well, we've been waiting to get a brochure that should be ready shortly, touting the international consortium, because you almost have to have that to have credibility. And we plan to write to all the companies, U.S. companies that are doing business in Russia or planning to do business in Russia, try to sell it as a way to get a favorable reputation with the Russian authorities. We're working very hard on getting government money. The study proposal that we submitted to DOE, which was mentioned at the news conference as having been favorably reviewed, DOE, in its very narrow parochialism, the bad guy is this fellow Robert Goldsmith, who's here at the conference, said, notwithstanding the fact that this is generally a good review, the only thing we would ever consider funding is the Fred Hutchinson part of it, the study of the people at Bryansk. They were not interested in studying the Israeli immigrants or the U.S. immigrants. That's a bureaucratic kind of thing. Go back a year ago at National Airport, getting off of an airplane, an African-American lady came up and introduced herself to me and told me how much she admired what I had done with regard to the Navy integration when I was running it. When I called her last week, Mrs. O'Leary reminded me of that. She's the one, so she's expressed very strong support already by phone of this project, and I hope with the kind of the data we collect from this meeting, I've got a meeting set up with her for April 20th, that I can get this guy turned around and get her to say, yes, if the Congress made some money available, I'd be very happy to support it. I've been working on Senator Glenn's staff and we have a friendly advocate there who will help us get some language in the appropriations bills. One of my problems is that I probably have made enough trips to the well that it's a little awkward, because I've been working on Chairman Natcher of the House Appropriations Committee to put some money in to study the Agent Orange exposed population in Vietnam. And so I've got to use the senatorial side to get this problem solved.
You're wearing out your welcome on one side of the aisle. How directly is your motivation on this tied into your Agent Orange experience?
Well, you know, these things grow by osmosis. I got into the National Marrow Donor Program when Dr. Don Thomas called me and asked me to, because Musa and I figured it was probably a better thing to have a living memorial to our son than to try to put something in brick and mortar. Having gotten interested in it, that's led to this international consortium. Just by the exposure to Dr. Vorobyov and the admiration that I developed for him and what he stood for, the Agent Orange thing was more directly related to Elmo, in that Secretary Derwinski, after reading the book, called me in and asked me if I would do this study as a non-paid special assistant, which I did for 7 months. And that has led... Hello? Ready for Vorobyov.
That has led me to absolute conviction.
that the government... The executive branch of the government has been corrupt with regard to the Agent Orange issue, has deceived the victims, has manipulated the studies, all of which I put in my report to Secretary Derwinski, and which was in large part, I believe, responsible for the subsequent decision by the Congress, with Derwinski's active participation and agreement, in eliminating the Committee on Environmental Hazards, which was the statutory appendage that had been set up to advise him and his predecessors on Agent Orange, a bunch of doctors who were infiltrated by chemical company scientists, and to create instead a system where the National Academy of Sciences has been given the job of studying Agent Orange. And furthermore, I think